It is another edition of the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Wes Chang alongside Brad Bierman. We're going to get to Syracuse's spring practice in a little bit, as well as a big win for the lacrosse team. But we begin today with a flurry of moves in the Syracuse basketball world. In the past week, we've seen Judah Mintz enter the NBA draft. Peter Carey followed Jerry McNamara in the portal to Siena, and Mihir Hima entering the portal himself. And Syracuse also hiring Dan Engelstad away from Mount St. Mary's to be an assistant coach. So, Brad, so many moves. What do you think?
This is the world of college hoops today. Transition each offseason, not only with the roster this year for Syracuse, of course, but with the coaching staff. And it's going to continue into May. There's no doubt about it. This is just the beginning. And I think Syracuse fans are going to have to be a little bit patient for everything to sort out, to fill out the roster eventually. I mean, seven vacancies to begin the offseason, Wes, that's a lot. And I think one of the things that stands out are the players that have committed so far. Benny Williams going to Central Florida, a Big 12 program. So that says right away, playing for a coach like Johnny Dawkins, who, you know, believes in a change of scenery, obviously knows of the athleticism and talent, the natural talent of a player like Benny Williams, and a program like UCF competing now in the Big 12 in its second year upcoming. It's going to be real interesting. You know, we've seen other recent Syracuse players transfer to Power 5 or Power 6 programs and not have a whole ton of success. So certainly be interesting to see how Johnny Dawkins and his staff develops Benny Williams at UCF. For Peter Carey and Siena, well, certainly makes sense with Jerry McNamara going there. And certainly from a talent level and development level, the MAC conference seems to be a reasonable landing place for Carey. And also now makes it interesting to see if that's going to be a similar type of scenario for Justin Taylor, as he's still looking to announce his transfer location along with Kadir Copeland. And if they're going to be in those mid-major type, you know, programs, or how high is that competition going to be? But Wes, I really wonder, you know, how long is it going to take to, you know, in this day and age, there's negotiations behind the scenes when it comes to NIL. There's other commitments that are going on. Players are changing by the day, you know, or announcing by the day, I should say. And I think it always comes down to a game of musical chairs. And Syracuse has filled, you know, one need with a center. They brought, you know, to campus players of need. They need three-point shooting and they need rebounding. And they need more of it. And let's see if they can get those kind of players that are going to complement the two freshmen that are coming in.
Yeah, so Brett, I wanted to start with Engelstad because I think it's a tremendous hire for Syracuse. You know, someone coming in with head coaching experience to sit in that assistant chair, and he's won everywhere he's gone. I know in the lower levels, but still, he's been incredibly successful. So you look at the player development skills that he's had, and you know Syracuse really hit a home run hire with him. And not for nothing, but he's got strong ties to the critical DMV area for recruiting. And when he brings in Mount St. Mary's transfer guard Dakota Lafeu, who took an official visit to Syracuse over the weekend, you know, that's part of what he's bringing in, one of the hottest transfer portal prospects, you know, average 17 a game at that level. So, you know, they need all the recruiting they can get with all these players leaving. And then they get Eddie Lampkin, who you mentioned, you know, someone who's going to help with rebounding and protecting the interior, really solidifying that center position, especially with Hema and Carey leaving. And I, you know, again, you mentioned it, but good on Jerry McNamara for taking Peter Carey with him to Siena. And in terms of roster moon, let's just play the scenario out. Let's just say they end up with Lafeu. You wonder if Syracuse gets him and they move J.J. Starling to maybe more of a primary ball handler role with Judah Mintz putting his name into the NBA draft. It's kind of interesting to see how that scenario plays out, you know, with how the roster construction is going to be. Again, they need to replace seven players. They've only got one so far. There's going to be a lot of movement in the next month.
Well, I think a lot of what you just said ties together, the Engelstad hiring. You know, that has a lot of fingerprints on that of, you know, conversations, not only, of course, with John Wildack, but Red Autry as an athletic director does with head coaches after every season. They sit down, they do evaluations, they review so many different items on their list. And when they look at the coaching staff and we're looking at all the scenarios of, you know, Jerry McNamara moving on or not, and, you know, likely moving on, how were they going to, you know, fill that opening? And I also see some fingerprints of Jim Boeheim on this and lending his advice, certainly still working with the athletic department as a senior advisor to Wildak, and, you know, wanted to have, as you said, that veteran coach. And I think this is really interesting. You know how we, Elijah Robinson had talked about the football program, really seeing the talent they had and then putting the schemes around those players. And I think we're going to kind of see this now with basketball as they're constructing the roster. They're bringing in an outside voice, an experienced voice, as you mentioned. He's been a head coach. He's done player development. He's done season turnarounds where your team's been 4 or 5 wins and he gets them to, you know, 15 the next year. So he has that kind of experience, all the administrative tasks, et cetera. So they're going to sit down. I think they're really going to look at philosophies. I really think they're going to look at these offensive and defensive schemes. And as you say, they're going to put the players on the roster in the best position to succeed. And if that means moving a player like J.J. Starling over, well, they'll do that. And again, they need rebounding and three-point shooting. We saw last, they always got to play defense, but rebounding, lack of rebounding, both offensively and defensively, West, you know, pretty good with steals and controlling tempo that way. But, you know, we also know the lack of three-point shooting. So not surprising, you know, kind of directions are going to go. But I really like to see this outside influence of an experienced head coach joining the program.
So, Brad, I want to move over to the lacrosse team, the Orange, all but stamping their ticket to the NCAA tournament over the weekend, a big-time win over North Carolina on the road, 10-9. Snapping a 2-game losing streak, and anytime you can defeat a ranked conference team on the road, I think you have to call that a big time win.
No doubt, Wes. This has really been a crazy roller coaster season of lacrosse for Syracuse and Gary Gates' third year. We can see what's been going on, you know, a trend that's kind of a negative lately, not being able to finish out games in the fourth quarter. And that's something that, you know, Gate alluded to after the win over North Carolina. But it's crazy to think, you know, a couple of weeks ago we talked about if Syracuse could have pulled an upset at Notre Dame, they might have been number one in the nation. But certainly Notre Dame is Syracuse's nemesis of the last couple of seasons, kind of in another class in that series. But when you look at the standings now, because of Duke knocking off Virginia a day after Syracuse won at North Carolina, the Orange in second place behind Notre Dame. And, you know, they owe Virginia as the Cavaliers come in the home finale, the regular season finale coming up on Saturday afternoon, they owe the Cavaliers and they'll be gunning for them. And so if Syracuse should pull off that win and go to 3-1, pretty much secure, you know, a second place finish. And, you know, crazier things have happened because Notre Dame has North Carolina and they finish up with Virginia a week after Syracuse plays it. So it's also going to come down to the ACC tournament coming back. It'll be interesting to see. Syracuse may have another game right away against Virginia. So that will be interesting. But the bottom line is they're going to be in the NCAA tournament, and that's what the season's all about. And Wes, I've been looking at the numbers. I really think, again, unless some crazy thing happens, 2 consecutive defeats, that Syracuse is in line to host a first-round game. And that weekend is, you know, Mother's Day weekend, graduation, the same small window there to play that Sunday night evening game in the first round. But as of now, they would host a first-round game unless, you know, as I said, they lose to Virginia and or also the open up the ACC tournament. So what a turnaround to go from, you know, a losing record, winning record, just over 500 last year to, you know, 10 wins so far this year and a shot to host a first round NCAA tournament game.
Yeah, there's a couple things I wanted to talk about from the game itself. And Brad, you noted this in your 3 takeaways from the game that you published, but Will Mark continues to be really dominant in net. And, you know, he saw 33 shots, you know, 22 of them on goal, and he finished with 13 saves. So, you know, he's entering in the top 20 in save percentage. So, you know, they need to continue to find ways to limit the shots on goal. But the shots that are getting to goal, he's doing a great job of saving. So, you know, kudos to Will Mark, who continues to have that defense to hold North Carolina to under 10 goals is tremendous. And, you know, the other thing that you pointed out, which I also wanted to point out too, is, you know, Virginia is going to be a really big game. The number 4 team coming in the end of the regular season. This is another bellwether game. You know, I talked about Notre Dame, number 1 on the road, being a bellwether game. Well, this one is as well. Virginia is a team that Syracuse has really wanted to compete with over time, and they have a perfect opportunity to send a message at the end of the regular season that Syracuse lacrosse is back, that opportunity to go 3-1 in the very hyper-competitive ACC heading into the NCAA tournament. So a lot on the line, even though Syracuse is pretty safely into the NCAA tournament at this point.
Real important win would be Virginia this game, Wes, because they've beaten Duke and Hopkins. They're ranked ahead of them in this week's poll. Notre Dame, as we said, has been the nemesis. Lost the overtime game to Maryland in the Dome, which, you know, had chances to win that game, and then lost to Cornell, had chances to win that game also in overtime. So kind of need Virginia to make up for those two games and the Army loss of a top 15 ranked teams for strength of schedule and have the best ranking in position bracket-wise for the tournament.
We're going to take a quick break here. Tyler Morona on the other side to talk a little Syracuse football alongside Brad Bierman. This is Wes Chang. This is the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Back on the Juice on the Cuse podcast, Wes Chang alongside Brad Bierman. And as you all know, spring practice wrapping up here in Syracuse. We welcome on friend of the show and former Syracuse defensive lineman, Tyler Morona. Tyler, always appreciate having you on the program. How are you today?
I'm honored to be here and I'm glad to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. Tyler, I want to get you started on this one. You've gotten to know new head coach Fran Brown as an alumni. I know that you've been on a Zoom call with him before. So what do you think of the new program direction? What do you think of that call?
Honestly, it's kind of what you see is what you get. There's not a lot of mixed messages with Coach Fran. And I think the coolest thing about it, and I was just thinking about this last night too, was that was such an easy thing to put together that had never been done before. And so it's just the ideas that he has are, there's nothing revolutionary. There's nothing, he's not reinventing any wheel. He's just doing the basics at a fantastic level. And I feel like, you know, I really don't want to speak ill of, you know, anybody, because there's been a couple coaches in between my coach and Coach Brown, and everybody has their pluses and minuses, but it seems as though Coach Brown's really trying to lay a foundation, and he wants us to be a part of, and he's inviting us to be a part of, and that's a lot different than it has been in the past, and it's got a lot of folks that are in my age range really excited to give back in a couple different ways. So we're it's to me, I cannot stop talking about it. My wife is sick of me already talking about Coach Fran, but it's just, I'm excited.
Tyler, I wanted to follow up on that. The direction with getting the alumni back, I think it's so important when you think about the legacy and the history and the success of Syracuse football. Foundations have been built in the past. You go back to the 50s in which Coach Ben did and getting to a national championship, producing a Heisman Trophy winner. Then Coach Ben's, you know, tenure as many coaches after they've coached for many years, you can see that's going to come to an end. So they bring Frank Maloney along from Michigan. So he was kind of a disciple from there. He built the program as best he could. They gave him that first year in the Dome. And then I really think the modern era foundation was built by Coach Mack. And it took him, you know, 7 years to do that. And remember, early in his career, all the fans sack Mack. There was no patience even back in the 80s. Now we've evolved to your playing career and the Coach P and then the end of his tenure into the Greg Robinson era and the direction that was, you know, thought of by the administration. And then moving forward, let's bring an alum back with Doug Marone and a little bit of successor with bowl games. And then kind of caught late in the cycle with his time up, going to the NFL with Scott Schaefer. And then Dino Babers had some success, you could say, over his 8-year career. As you mentioned, the foundation now with Coach Brown, as you see it and you feel it, getting the alumni back, where do you think this is going as Syracuse tries to compete now in the ACC and then as college football shakes out with the power teams?
I think the easiest way to say it is just that I think everybody's been really clamoring for it, and there's been a thirst and desire just to be taken for real. And I think that Coach Fran's arrival signifies and it cements the fact that SU from top to bottom wants to be taken for real. They went to the champion, the cream of the crop, the best that there is, and they said, we want your best assistant. And Coach Smart said, this is our best assistant. And whether or not he was Will Muschamp or their offensive coordinator or the most important guy that it says on the roster, the guy, I think we're seeing that he was their most important assistant at Georgia from recruiting. And then let's just flip it around and say, one thing Coach Franz stressed in that Zoom call was, if you're an alum, I want your firstborn's rights. Like, basically, I want to be able to recruit your kid first. Like, make him tell me no first. So I'm not going to say Marvin Harrison Jr. was going to be a slam dunk orange if Coach Fran was the coach when he was getting recruited. But I'll tell you, he would have taken a visit. He would have given that time of day. And I think the biggest thing with Coach Fran is that he has something to sell, because everybody's taking us for real, and we are making ourselves to be taken for real. And I think that's where we're at right now, is that foundation's already there because of the history, because of where we've been. I left Los Angeles, California, in that area to sign with Syracuse. And it was because I saw the writing on the wall. And everybody that goes to Syracuse to play football, I believe, genuinely believes that we can return to where we've been, and that our class, or whoever's the next class to be, is going to be the one to take us there. And I think it's an easy selling point once you have someone that's as excitable as Coach Fran.
When you look at, especially the news today, Syracuse pulling in a 2026 commit, and then they have another guy from Cicero North Syracuse committing, and you see that ranking number of number 10, not in the ACC, in the country, attached to Syracuse in their 2025 class, and then their 2026 class is ranked 9th overall. What does that say to you as an alum, and how excited are you to see Coach Fran following up on exactly what he was selling, which is the recruiting is gonna catch up to the rest of the country?
I've texted a couple people already saying that I'm not worried about recruiting ever again. Like, I'm just kind of like, I'm more concerned about the play, like more like the NFL style of like, what are we going to be doing on the field? And we can be more critical of what is going on in the field, because I really feel like from here on out, Coach Fran's going to make good on his promise that said, I'm going to go recruit the best players. I don't care who's recruiting them. If I want you, I want you to come here. I don't want to lose the battle for you. And they're also making good on their promise that they want to put a brick wall around the Northeast. And I think we're only two commits shy in the 25 class of having the top 10 players from New York all come to Syracuse. That is meaningful in and of itself, because we're going to rebrand the identity of the state and really start to grow out from there. And if we can't take care of our own backyard, then how can we sell something that's, disingenuous in the first place, right? So I can't say enough. I mean, he's made good on so many promises already. He's built so much equity within the fans, the former players, the donor. Like, I don't know what you can say that about this guy yet. We'll see in the spring game if he has like no, ability to actually coach, but I don't think that's the case either. Because listening to him on the Zoom call talk about the defensive scheme, I was like, this is what we've all been wanting all along. And so when we flip back to where we want to go, and he goes, yeah, we can go to a four down, basically 4-2-5 defense that an SEC team plays now, and it's not gonna be a problem because we're gonna have 400-300 pounders along the defensive line that are just gonna kick butt. It's like, okay, fine, like I believe you, you're going to do it. So that's my takeaway.
You mentioned not being worried about recruiting anymore, Tyler, and I hear you loud and clear, because wow, he's taken us the program by storm. And to that point, you just alluded to the defense. That's what, fans of the media were all excited to see. And I guess we'll get a little bit of glimpse in the spring game. They keep it pretty vanilla. Media only gets a few minutes for each practice. But, being closer to the program, what can you share a little bit of your thoughts where you think the offense may be this upcoming season?
I think it's going to try to resemble a pro-style offense as best as possible, or more SEC type, not LSU, air raid, five wide. I just don't think that's where you have success in the ACC right now. I think you have success in the ACC by out-toughing the teams that are claiming to be tough. Clemson's fallen off a little bit. Florida State will fall off a little bit. Miami, their coach forgot how to take a knee in a teams to go up and line up and out physical Coach Fran's team moving forward. So I think as far as where we're going moving forward, there's going to be a big emphasis on running the ball and then trying to get our skill position players in one-on-one matchups. and taking advantage of some really good athleticism that Coach Fran brought in. So I see a lot of hope and optimism with Zeed Haynes coming in. I see a lot of hope and optimism with Orande being back. It's the roster has just been built out so perfectly from what almost all the holes have been filled. I'm truly more excited about defense, to be quite – I play defense, sure. Right. But I think the Jimmys and Joes are finally plugged into the correct spot, and it's going to be – it's going to be a breath of fresh air. Like, I don't think people are just going to run up the middle for us on 10 yards ever again. So that's really awesome.
Tyler, I want to get you out of here on this one. What is a reasonable expectation for you for wins and losses this fall? Like, what does success look like for you in year one? Because it's, you know, a new coaching staff, new scheme, a lot of new players coming in, especially, and that's just the nature of college football now with players coming in. But what does success look like for you this fall?
It's hard. It's hard to gauge because I have the schedule up right here. And if I'm honest, I think it could play out a thousand different ways. I think the one thing that I'm still concerned about until I'm not concerned about anymore is the injury history with the program. But then again, I don't think we have recruited players or brought in players in via the transfer portal that are going to be it's hard to say if they're going to be as fragile or not, but I feel more confident with our depth moving forward that if we are missing one player, it's not going to fold our entire team anymore. So that being said, I think a top four finish in the conference is very reasonable. And my hottest take is that we will be playing Miami the very last game of the year to vie for a trip to the championship game. And it very well may be against a team that's from Texas. And so that's my hottest of hot takes for you guys.
Tyler, thank you so much for spending a couple minutes with us again. Syracuse football alum and friend of the show, Tyler Marona. Appreciate your time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. We are back on the Juice on the Cuse podcast. I'm Brad Bierman, joined by my longtime friend and companion, Wes Chang from the West Coast. And Wes, I wanted to talk a little bit about the spring football game kicking off at 7 p.m. on Saturday night in the Dome. And what a great day in the Dome, right? Lacrosse in the afternoon, Paul Gates, number 19, to be retired to the rafters, and the football game at night. And for all of us, really, the first in-depth or somewhat in-depth look at the team for next season. And I wanted to point out that there are going to be a couple of guest coaches this year, which I think is just a fantastic idea to have John Lally and Zaire Franklin be the coaches on each side of the ball. And was thinking about this, looking up Zaire Franklin's record, Wes. If ever there was a player that Coach Fran would want to march out and show to any recruit or any member of the team currently for development and aspiration and growing and fulfilling a lifelong goal of being an NFL player, it's certainly Zaire Franklin. Now, first of all, as we all remember, when he played between 14 and 17, so a little bit of Scott Schaefer over to Dino Babers, the first three-time captain in Syracuse football history in the modern era. I mean, just think about that. Syracuse football, Zaire Franklin, three-time captain. I mean, just his leadership qualities, just amazing. Seventh-round draft pick of Indianapolis, makes the team, special team extraordinaire, hustles, does whatever the coaching staff wants, starts from plays from game one. By the second week of his rookie season, he started. Special teams extraordinaire through his career. By his third season, he's elected captain of the Colts. Just 3 years in the NFL. Fourth year, he gets a contract extension for $12.2 million. Fifth year, he's second in the NFL in tackles. Gets an offseason contract extension this past March, 3 years for $31.3 million. So as Coach Fran says, you want to come to play for a team competing for the national championship collegiately. You want to come to a program that's going to develop you. If you have a career for, you know, eyeing a career in the NFL, you're going to come to Syracuse. And I just want to tip the hat to Zaire Franklin and certainly to John Lally for all the financial contributions he's made to the football program and the new building named in his honor. And everything's going to be evolving from there. So looking forward to the game. For whatever we can see, hopefully there'll be a couple of explosives plays on the offensive side and defensively, and should be a great night.
Yeah, Brad, and I want to stay on that theme of football because I mentioned this and alluded to it with Tyler Marona in our interview segment, but two commitments to talk about with the Orange on Monday. So I'll start local. Cicero North offensive lineman Kadir Shepherd committing on Monday. Another local kid staying at home. So CBA's Darren Williams and Matthew Hahn staying at home. And now we have another player from Syracuse who they're keeping in their backyard. And got a really fast rating from Rivals national recruiting analyst Adam Freeman. He's another solid three-star prospect joining Syracuse, adding that to that historically great Syracuse recruiting class in 2025. Then moving on to Isaiah Williams, the Florida edge slash linebacker, committing to Syracuse as a 2026. So Syracuse already has two commitments in the pipeline from that class. That puts them ninth overall in the country 2 years from now, if you're thinking that far ahead. So, Brad, every time I mention this, and I think your initial reaction is, keep it coming. Well, they're keeping it coming. What a phenomenal job Syracuse has done recruiting during this spring, getting all these great commitments, both from 2025 and 2026. They're still working on 2024 with some of these preferred walk-on offers they're handing out. So they're always thinking about recruiting, and it's just what an era for recruiting in Syracuse.
And I think the mode's changed a little bit, though, Wes, when I've been thinking about this. They've done all this work to get these commitments. The list is just so impressive numerically, both from commitments, you know, to the program and where it is, you know, ranking nationally, you know, just unheard of. But I think what this is going to lead to is a lot more work a little bit later in this cycle into the summer and the fall with these players, because you know other schools are going to come after them. It's just the way the nature of the beast works with college recruiting. And I think that's going to be some of the work for this staff in the fall, is keeping commitments, because certainly well-intentioned, they've done a great job, no doubt, both keeping the local players, as you mentioned, and then getting, you know, position needs and geographically a lot of speed and athleticism. But I think that's going to be something interesting to watch moving forward, as they get these commitments early, what kind of work they're going to have to do on the back end to make sure they can maintain those commitments.
Well, that's it for us. For Brad Bierman, this is Wes Chang. You've been listening to the Juice on the Cuse podcast presented by Believe in Rivals, and we will see you next time.